I'm Thilsy.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out. AllAussieRadio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country, 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 PM.
All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we are in Hay.
Yes.
The wonderful town of Hay.
Down in southern Western New South Wales.
Southern Western New South Wales. Yes, well, that's it. That's it, listeners. It's Western New South Wales, hey. And we are going to be going to the Sheer Outback Experience.
Right, okay. That sounds exciting.
Fantastic museum, talking all about the shearing days. And you know what? They've even got a talking sheep in there who tells you what it's like to be shorn.
I bet his name's Sean the Sheep.
Well, I don't know if his name's Sean, but he was Sean, and he's going to tell you all about his experience. And we're also going to be talking to their resident shearer, Jack, who's going to tell us what it's like to be a shearer.
Right, exciting.
And he's a retired shearer now, but he does the shearing demonstrations there at Shear Outback. Straight after that, we're going to be talking to Ali from the Hay Jail.
Oh, okay, yes.
And she's going to be telling us all about the jail, because the jail's very historical. A lot of stuff went on there at the jail. And she's also going to be telling us all about wonderful things in and around the Hay area to see.
Okay, yeah.
Now, after that, remember I mentioned last week that we were going to catch up with a young couple, David and Martina, that are doing the big lap.
Yes.
I caught up with David and Martina.
Wonderful.
Now, David and Martina, they're a young couple and they are doing the big lap with no end date. Absolutely no end date whatsoever. Now, they're going to be telling us all about their trip. They're going to tell us all about their rig and what David did to it in order to make it ready for them to do this big trip.
Okay, yep.
Now,
that sounds good.
Apart from all of that, we have got a fantastic selection of Australian music as selected by the people we interview.
Yes.
So we've got some. Who have we got?
Oh, we've got a little bit of Slim Dusty.
Yes.
And we've got Cold Chisel.
Yep.
And Travis Collins and Amber Lawrence.
Absolutely. Doing a fantastic duo, Lynn. It's a song called Our Backyard.
Australia is our backyard.
Australia is our backyard. And I've got to tell you, listeners, it's a fantastic song. And we're going to be playing that for David and Martina requested that one.
Right.
Yeah, they messaged me in advance and asked me if I had it. And, of course, we have it all here. At Roman Oz, okay? We've got the lot. So, Lynn, what do you reckon?
On with the show!
Hello, listeners. Phil C here from Roaming Oz, and I'm in the town of Hay at Sheer Outback with Tegan. And Tegan is going to explain to us what my listeners can expect to see and do here at Sheer Outback. How are you today, Tegan?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thanks so much for taking some time out to chat with us today. Now, tell us all about Sheer Outback.
Sheer Outback was opened in 2002. It's an interactive museum that also has a dedicated Hall of Fame.
Right.
At the moment, we have 43 inductees, shearers who have come from all across the country, excelled in the workplace, and just have been recognised for their contribution to the shearing industry.
Fantastic stuff. Now, I understand you have shearing demonstrations. Is that correct?
Yes, we have three a day, 10:30, 1 and 3, over at the Murray Downs Woolshed, which was relocated here from Swan Hill in 2002.
Right.
We have a shearer, Jack, who hosts them. He's very good, very funny, and he will give you a lot of knowledge.
Okay, fantastic. And you also have some video displays.
Yep, so we've got, there is three video displays. We have one that is dedicated to life in the shearing shed.
Right.
Talks a lot about the cooking roles, what to expect, and then the second one goes through the shearers, the contractors' families. It's got a bit on, like, the scabs of the team that goes into, like, money and wages and everything like that. Very interesting.
Yes.
And then there's even a little bit where we have an animated sheep that talks to you about what it's like being shorn.
All righty. Well, we might have a look at that a little bit later on. I can't imagine what it would be like to be shorn. Now, how much time do you think a person would need? What's an average, like minimum?
We recommend spending about an hour. That's to go through, read the Hall of Fame, look through the inductees, read about their history, what they've done to make it to the Hall of Fame. And then to go through, we've got a lot of, like, I guess you'd call it, like, history tally books, old medals, everything like that on the walls of people who've donated. We get a lot of donated gifts, like, that we could put in the museum. Watch the videos and then head over to the shed and watch the demonstration. That's 20 minutes to half an hour in itself by the time Jack shears the sheep.
Yep.
He'll then go through the wool, show you what different pieces come off a fleece and where it all goes.
Mm-hmm.
And then out the back we also have a maze that you're more than welcome to walk through. That's a good place for the kids to go while you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can head into the cafe and grab yourself a hot coffee and some shearer's smoko.
Fantastic. Now, what does it take to become a shearer to get into the Hall of Fame? Because I understand your pop's going into the Hall of Fame, is that correct?
He came in 2019.
Okay.
So my pop was a very well-known shearer. He'd done a lot of travelling. He went over to Japan and taught shearing over there. He had a world record of 403 sheep.
Right.
That was a very long time ago. Sheep these days, records are up in the 600, 700, 800, 900s.
Okay.
In a day. Had his own style. He developed a lot of stuff. They then went on and developed their own clothing brand. They were Morrisons of Euroa. And, yeah, he got inducted in 2019. Sadly passed away just before Christmas last year. So it was very nice to honour him in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And it's good that I get to come here and look at it every day on the board.
And talk about him. So what's Pop's name?
Pop was Brian Morrison. From Euroa.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And you said they have some sort of a competition? They're inducted every 2 years?
Yeah, so there's an induction panel.
Right.
And each year people send in nominations of family, friends, people they've worked with that they think should be in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this year we had 33 and they narrowed it down to only 5.
Wow.
So it's quite a process and you've got to have a lot of raw material that comes with it, photos, proof of their, like, history and stuff like that. Like, you need a lot of knowledge behind it.
Right.
And the panel only selects 5.
Okay, okay. So is it a young person's game now, you think? Or is it with all the modern technology, I suppose, anybody could become... Well, not anybody, but shearing's not as difficult physically as it used to be.
I'd say it's still as difficult physically.
Right.
It is a lot... Like, there is a lot of young people coming up in it, but you still go to the odd shed where... You get an old bloke who's 70 and he's still doing 200 a day.
Okay, okay. All right, well, I'm a bit of an old bloke and I'm not even going to give it a try. Look, it's been fabulous speaking with you, Tegan. I know my listeners are going to love it. Tell us a little bit about your coffee shop and also your gift shop before we go.
So the gift shop stocks a range of... We go from novelty items all the way up to high-end handbags.
Mm-hmm.
We stock a lot of Australian-made products, because consumers want that these days. Tea towels, books, like children's books, they're always popular, Australian-made. And then in the cafe, our lovely cooks, Mandy and Karen, they make a lot of homemade stuff, biscuits, scones, cakes, everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful hot coffee.
Right. Pies and sausage rolls, are they made here on site? And
No, I don't think those ones are.
Main meals obviously are, and the sandwiches and the toasties.
Yep, main meals, sandwiches. They do traditional shearer's grub, so your lamb's fry.
Wow.
Delicious.
Okay.
Hot
damper? Do they do damper?
No, I don't think they do damper.
Okay.
They do scones. Right.
Yep.
And, yeah.
Wonderful. Lovely stuff. Now, lastly, what about the cost? Now, you'd obviously have different prices for... Have you got a seniors or a pensioners?
Yep, so we have a concession seniors card. That's $15. An adult's 20. A child over the age of 12 is 10. Or we do a family, which is adults and children for $45.
For $45. And it's great value for money.
Yeah.
And you can learn a lot about the industry.
You learn a lot about the industry. You learn about... Well, basically everything. The goods, the bads, the struggles.
Yes.
A lot of people walk out of here realising that shearing isn't just a job. Like, it's a lifestyle as well.
Yes,
and it's a bloody hard job at the end of
the day. Absolutely,
yep. And it takes a whole team to make the day go smooth.
Fantastic. Well, this interview has gone exceptionally smooth, Tegan. Thank you so much for your time. I'm going to play you a song now. What would you like to hear? You got a favourite Aussie band?
Cold Chisel.
Cold Chisel.
K-San.
K-San. Look, I should have guessed it just by looking at you, darling. Thank you so much for your time. Listeners, Tegan, here at Shear Outback here in Hay. Stick around for Cold Chisel, and straight after that, we'll be back with more Roman Oz.
Left my heart to the sapphires round casing, and I sold my soul with my cigarettes to the black market man. I've had the Vietnam cold turkey from the ocean to the silver city, and it's only I the vets could understand about the long-forgotten dark side guarantees. How there were no V-Day heroes in 1973, and how we sat in a Sydney harbor, her son opened but I couldn't kiss her. Well, she was lying and I was home to Lucky Land. She was like so many more from that time on. The lives were all so empty until they found their chosen one. And the legs were often open, but their minds were always closed. And their hearts were held in fast suburban chains.
K-San, what a great song, written by Donnie Walker, the pianist, of course, from Cold Chisel, released back in May of 1978. Now, the song deals with the concerns of an Australian veteran coming back and dealing with civilian life. What a fantastic track. Absolutely love the band Cold Chisel. Well, now, listeners, we're still at the Shear Outback here in Hay, and we're going to be chatting now with their resident shearer, Jack, and he's going to tell us all about life as a shearer.
How are you going today, Jack?
Yeah, not too bad. Yourself?
Oh, mate, I'm having a good time, and I've got to tell you, I'm extremely impressed. I've just seen you shear a sheep. It took you about 3 minutes, You've been a shearer all your life, is that right?
Oh, just about all my life, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And you're now doing it out here. You've retired from the full-time game of shearing.
Yeah, health problems pulled me back here. Otherwise, I probably would be still shearing.
Okay, fair enough. Now, shearing's not an easy game, is it?
No, it's not. It's a very hard game.
Very hard game. Yeah. A lot of people think, anybody can do it. But I just saw the way you threw that sheep around. I've got to tell you, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Did it take you long to learn to become a shearer?
Yeah, about 2 or 3 years to learn properly, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you learned just as you stood in the shearing shed and watched the other fellas, or they take you on as a rookie?
I was a rouseabout for a couple of years, and I learned that way.
Okay. So what's a rouseabout do for the listeners?
Well, it picks the fleece up and skirt the fleece, mm-hmm. and sweep the board. And do whatever else is done by the classer. The classer's his boss.
Okay.
So he runs, the classer runs him.
So the classer, what does he do? Does he sort of
grade
the wool?
He skirts the wool and makes sure everything's going right with the wool and everything.
Okay. Yeah. So it took you about 3 years to learn to shear.
Yeah.
And it's a hard game.
No, it is a hard game. Yes.
It's physically demanding. You were saying to me before that, you know, the shearers usually gets up to around 50 degrees because of the temperature of the shed,
yep.
plus the heat of the animal that's coming off onto you.
Yep.
So, pretty hard game. And what's an average day for an average shearer? How many sheep would he shear?
Oh, around about 150, 160 a day.
150 to 160 a day. Average. Now, what about your top gun shearers? What are they up to?
Well, they're 220, 250 a day.
Crikeys. Now, 250 a day, you've been over all day. It's a rugged, hard job. It's physically demanding. What sort of money would you get what's a sheep worth to shear, first of all?
Well, $3.20. That's what they get for a sheep today.
$3.20, and that's before your tax?
Yeah, the tax has got to come out of that.
Tax has got to come out of that. And I understand, you were chatting to us before, and you said that you've also got to buy all your own equipment.
That is dead right. Roughly, you'll end up around about $2 a sheep after you take your holiday pay out.
Okay.
And if you end up with $2, and then you've got to buy all your shearing gear out of that.
Yeah, look, you were saying that to me, and you said like a set of blades and the head unit for the shearing is around about how much, did you say?
The handpiece alone is about 830.
Right.
Then the combs and cutters. Well, the cutters, say you buy 100 cutters.
Yep.
You're looking at, just say, $700.
$700.
That's about the cheapest ones you can get.
$700 for the cutters, $800 for the handpiece.
Yeah. Then you've got your combs.
And the combs.
Yeah, they're $40 each.
And how long would they last you for?
Well, around about 20 grinds on the grinder.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so in terms of time, would you get a season out of those, or half a season, or 6 months, a year?
Oh, roughly about 2 months. All depends on the season too.
Okay.
Yeah, all depends how hard you've got to grind them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it all comes down to.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And you can bugger your combs up real quick if you don't know how to grind too.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Well, take the edge off them or
no, grind to one side or the points or you've got to grind back. It's a lot of involved. You've got to go to the school. More or less, I had to learn how to grind.
So, did you do, when you were shearing, did you do all your own grinding?
Well, they had shearers schools then too, like learn how to grind properly.
Okay, yep.
Yeah.
All right.
That's how I learnt. Buggered a lot of tools before I come good.
So by the time you buy your tools, and you were saying before also that you got to pay for your own food.
That's right, when you're camped out.
You're camped out. Now, what about if you're in a contractor? Do they feed you and look after you in that sense?
They supply the cook and everything else like that. They look after you.
Yep.
And you just pay $40 or $35 a day for camping out. Yeah.
Okay, you're making a couple of $100 a day, and then you got your equipment, and then you pay your camp out fees.
Yeah.
It's not a real way of making heaps of money, is it, for a lot of hard work?
Or you leave leave home, then you might travel 800 kilometres to get to that shed.
Yeah.
And it might only go for a week and a half.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not like years ago where they used to go for 4 weeks where you could make some money out of the shed.
Yep.
But now they only go for about a week and a half, then you've got to head back home and head to another shed when you get back home.
Look, it's been a pleasure chatting with you, my friend, Jack. Absolute brilliant. Seeing you shear that sheep, mate, It's good to see that you're taking it easy now. You said your health came in the way.
Yeah, yeah.
But to come out here and shear a sheep for the tourists, you've still got the art.
Oh, thank you very
much. I've got to tell you, mate. You've still got the art. There's no way I could do it. It took you about 3 minutes, and you said the gum boys do it in about two. So you're still doing pretty good.
Oh, well, I only done one, too.
Oh, yeah. You did. So you reckon by the end of the day, you'll be up to 6 minutes of sheep?
Oh, something like that would be.
Fair enough, Jack. Mate, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. Now, I'm going to play your song, mate. Who's your favourite Australian singer or band?
Oh, Slim Dusty, mate.
Got to be Slim. It'd have to be Slim. Yeah. And what about a favourite Slim song?
Oh,
biggest disappointment?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of it.
All right, listeners, we're going to get up the biggest disappointment by Slim Dusty, and you're not the biggest disappointment, Jack. Fantastic work, my friend, and keep it up for as long as you can.
Okay, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, mate. Now, stick around, listeners. We'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after this track.
They had my future wrapped up in a parcel, and no one even thought of asking me. The day I turned 15, I caught the mail train to find what else might be in life for me. I rode on trucks and trains and lived on nothing. Served me right for wanting to be free. Ah, well, that's the way society looked at it, but it didn't seem to be that way to me. And the biggest disappointment in the family was me, the only twisted branch upon our good old I just couldn't be the person they expected me to be. And the biggest disappointment in the world was me. A lot more dinner times than there were dinners. I learned a lot that hurt me at the time. Then this quiet country boy went home a different man, with a memory of distance on my mind. But I always spoke too loud and laughed too often, maybe drank too many glasses down, and perhaps my clothes were older than I realized. A relief to all concerned when I left town. And the biggest disappointment in the family was me, the only twisted branch upon our good old family tree. I just couldn't be the person they expected me to be. And the biggest disappointment in the world was be. And the biggest disappointment in the world was me.
Oh, hello listeners, Phil C here, and this is Roaming Oz if you've just joined us, and we're in Hay, and I'm chatting with Ali, and Ali is involved with the Hay Tourism Department. How are you, Ali?
I'm great, Phil. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, look, it is my absolute pleasure. When I was in Hay a little while back, I managed to see some wonderful things, but I also missed out on quite a few wonderful things. So you're going to tell us, for all our listeners and for the tourists coming through Hay, what are the things they have to make sure they see?
Well, Phil, if you've never been to the Hay Plains before, let me just give you a little description. It is the flattest place in the southern hemisphere.
Okay.
It covers an area around about the size of Switzerland.
Okay.
So
wow.
It's huge,
yes,
but without the mountains.
Uh-huh.
And we are the centre of four highways. So we like to say that everything leads to Hay.
Right.
If you get here, some of the things that you really need to do, we like to say there's a top five, Phil.
Okay.
So if you've done the top five, you've seen Hay.
Okay.
So probably the first thing, given that flat landscape that we have, is the sunset viewing area.
Right.
It's just 16 kilometres north of Hay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an area that we've developed up quite gently. And people head out there every afternoon to see the sunset. And you'll often find quite a few other travellers out there getting ready with their cameras and their iPhones to capture what are quite incredible sunsets.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why they're so amazing, of course, is because it is an uninterrupted view. For 360 degrees, you can turn around there and there's not a single thing on the landscape that stops you from seeing those big skies. And during the autumn and winter months, they put it, Mother Nature puts on quite an incredible pink sky show. So we like to call it our pink sky season, and it really is quite breathtaking.
Yes.
So that's probably one of the main things that you need to do.
Okay.
Then because we're also so flat, one of the fun things to do is to grab a free bike from the Hay Tourism Information Centre.
A free bike?
A free bike.
Wow. So, there you go, listeners. A free bike.
We like people to come in, they just give us their name and details, we pop them on one of our brand new bikes, put a helmet on them, give them a map and say, go and explore our town. And
amazing.
People love it.
Yeah, yeah, I can understand that. And a free bike and as well.
Absolutely. And, well, we do want them to return.
Of course.
It's a really good way to explore probably one of our next features, which are our museums. So we're really lucky to have a deep and rich history here. We've got five museums.
Uh-huh.
People might have heard of probably Shear Outback, the Australian Shearers Hall of Fame.
Absolutely, yes. Called in there. We chatted with them before you. Yes, they're on this program.
Yeah, it's a great experience. It celebrates the shearing industry, which is, of course, a really important part of our history, but also a really important part of Australian history. Mm-hmm. You know, they say, we rode on the sheep's back. Well, we certainly did that here, and that's what celebrated at Shear Outback. One of the things that our visitors can see there, which is a highlight, is a live shearing demonstration.
Yes, so, I met Jack, amazing shearer too. He was.
Isn't he great?
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. So three times a day you can sit down and watch Jack shear a sheep and just get to know a little bit more, like a live demonstration. There's no better way to learn than a live experience like that.
Yep.
Then you can jump on your bike and visit some of our other museums. So we have Bishop's Lodge Historic House, which is a sustainably built house from the 1880s. So all the way back then, we had an architect, John Sulman, who looked at the heat around here and thought there's got to be a better way to build houses. And so he built that house using some really innovative techniques that, if you go into the house in the middle of summer, could be a 46-degree day, but it'll still be a beautiful 23 degrees inside.
Okay.
So it's quite amazing that they had those ideas all the way back then. And then Deneira Museum is one of our most poignant museums. What many people don't know is that during World War II, there was a prisoner of war camp here in Hay where a number of about 2,000 refugees from Eastern Europe were gathered up and sent out here on a ship called the Deneira. They were held here as prisoners of war for the duration of the war. One of the stories that we love to hear and tell people about that museum is that they had such a good time at the prisoner of war camp, many of them, that they chose to stay and make their home in Australia. And so we see lots of people who come back because of that family connection, both from here in Australia but overseas, because it was, for many of them, quite a joyous time when they were escaping fascism in Eastern Europe, and they came out all the way out here to Hay. And that's a beautiful museum as well. And so after you've done all of our fantastic museums, probably the last thing that you need to do is head down to Sandy Point Beach, which is on the Murrumbidgee River, and it's a beautiful spot to relax and unwind on the banks of the Bidgee. Beautiful soft white sand, and there are some great facilities down there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you probably had a really good experience of Hay.
Fantastic. And then, of course, there's the jail. Now, there's so much history involved in the Hay Jail, isn't there?
Absolutely. That's a real nostalgia museum for us. So it does tell the history through some incredible collections that they've put together down there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's history within the building itself as well. That building has some stories to tell.
Absolutely. And it's been used for many things too, hasn't it? It wasn't just a jail. A reform school for girls, is that right? Institution for girls. That was there as well, I think, from the 60s to the 70s. And
they did, and it was a maternity wing at some point, and it was also where some of the prisoners of war who were involved with De Niro were also kept there. So
absolutely,
it does have a really rich history, and it's a beautifully maintained museum.
It is indeed, and it's only from memories. It's a gold coin donation to go in there, isn't it?
All of our museums are, I would say, very inexpensive.
Yes.
Most of them are run by volunteer committees, mm-hmm, who are just passionate and dedicated to it. So gold coin donations, less than $5 to get into most,
absolutely,
of our museums.
Fantastic.
It's an inexpensive way to have a really good experience.
Absolutely brilliant. So what would you think about the average person coming through Hay? Do you think they obviously can't see it all in one day, can they? What do you think they should do? At least have a minimum of, say, 2-3 days there in Hay?
Oh, absolutely. If you're going to experience it all, you definitely need to have a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really good opportunity, a great place to actually stop and reset as well if you're doing some of those long kilometre trips that we know many of our visitors do. So it's a good central point that they can use to reset before they plan their next trip.
Thank you so much for giving us all that information, especially in relation to the beautiful sunset viewing, because when I was in Hay a little while ago, I actually missed all that. So I've definitely got to make a return trip just for that within itself.
Well, we do love people returning, Phil. That's one of the highlights. We love to welcome people back.
Well, we will be back because I saw pretty much everything, but I didn't see this sunset viewing area, and it's going to be on top of my list the next time I'm passing through Hay.
I think it should go on everyone's bucket list, Phil. It's a good idea.
Thank you so much for your time. This, Ali, you've been wonderful. My listeners are going to love you now. Can I play you a favourite song, an Australian artist or band, somebody you might really like?
Yeah, I've chosen Paul Kelly and the song From Little Things Grow, because even though we're a little town,
yes,
we do grow an enormous amount of fibre and food for the whole of Australia, but we also like to say that when people come here, they grow to love us. So From Little Things, big things grow.
Absolutely brilliant, and a great song. Thank you so much for your time, Ali.
Thanks, Phil.
And we'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after Paul Kelly.
Around people, I'll tell you a story, an 8-year-long story of power and pride. British Lord Vesty and Vincent Lignari were opposite men on opposite sides. Vesty was fat with money and muscle, beef was his business, broad was his door. Vincent was lean and spoke very little. He had no bank balance. Hard dirt was his floor. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. The Rinji were working for nothing but rations. But once they had gathered the wealth of the land, daily the pressure got tighter and tighter. The Rinji decided they must make a stand. They picked up their swags and started off walking. At Wadi Creek, they sat themselves down. Now it don't sound like much, but it sure got tongues talking. Back at the homestead, and then in the town. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. investing man said, I'll double your wages, 18 quid a week, you'll have in your hand. Vincent said, uh-uh, we're not talking about wages, we're sitting right here till we get our land. Investing man roared, investing man thundered, you don't stand a chance of a cinder and snow. Vin said, if we fall, others are rising from little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. Then Vincent Lingyari boarded an airplane, landed in Sydney, big city of lights. And daily he went round softly speaking his story to all kinds of men from all walks of life. And Vincent sat down with big politicians. This affair, they told him, it's a matter of state. Let us sort it out while your people are hungry. Vincent said, no thanks, we know how to wait. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. Then Vincent Lingyari returned in an airplane back to his country once more to sit down. And he told his people, let the stars keep on turning. We have friends in the south, in the cities and towns. Eight years went by, eight long years of waiting, till one day a tall stranger appeared in the land. And he came with lawyers, and he came with great ceremony, and through Vincent's fingers poured a handful of sand. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. Was the story of Vincent Lingyari, but this is the story of something much more. How power and privilege can unmove a people who know where they stand. Stand in the law. From little things, big things grow. 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 From little things, big things grow.
With overseas travel in lockdown,
There's no better time to see what's offer in your own backyard. And if you want to do it in style, with all the bells and whistles, then 7th Street Caravans, located at 2212 Pacific Highway, Heatherbrae, is where the journey begins. Check out their range, Paramount, Silver Valley, Road Trip and Option RV. With dozens of layouts, there's something for everyone's needs. 7th Street also has a large range of pre-loved vans. They won't be beaten on price, so grab yourself a knockout deal today. Phone Aidan and the team on 4987 5288 or check out the website 7thstreetcaravans.com.au. Oh, well, listeners, as I said last program, this is Phil C and we are Roaming Oz. And I did say to you, I was going to try and catch up with a young couple, David and Martina, that are actually doing a lap of Australia. And we actually did manage to catch up with them. How are you going, guys?
Excellent. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Fantastic. So you've been on the road for a little while now. Tell us, when did you actually leave your hometown? Because you come from Melbourne, is that correct?
Yeah, correct. We live in Melbourne, just on the eastern side near the Yarra Valley. So our trip sort of began around Easter time. We did a quick trip up to Leeton to a festival up there. And then once the festival finished, from there, we actually have a property in the Snowy Mountains, a family property.
Right.
So we traveled over to the property there just to spend a few days, because we're not going to see the property for about another 9 to 12 months at least until we finish the lap.
Yes.
So we thought we'd soak it up there and spend about 3 or 4 days there. And from there, our trip actually commenced.
Okay. Now, before this trip commenced, how long were you and Martina staring at maps and thinking, well, what are we going to do? Which direction are we going to head in? Did it take you a long time to put the preparation together for knowing where you wanted to go and when you wanted to be there?
Well, the trip has actually been in the planning for about 10 years.
So wow.
It's been a long one in the planning. It's been something that I've always wanted to do and delve into and really explore this country. I mean, I wasn't born in Australia. I was born in the Czech Republic in Europe. And Martina, she's from Slovakia. She's been in Australia for 2.5 years. And I came here in 1992. So coming up to about 30 years or something being in Australia.
Okay.
And my parents themselves were big travelers, and they were sort of always adventuring, exploring, and really, seeing what this country really has to offer. So it's always been in my blood and in my nature to sort of follow in those footsteps. And they always wanted to embark on a trip around Australia.
Okay.
And they still want to. Mm-hmm. And I've beaten them to it, which is great.
Good on you. Most people wait a lifetime. I've got to tell you, David, most people wait a lifetime and sell their house and cash in their super and do everything they can to do what you're doing now in your mid-30s. I mean, you and Martina, and Martina's not even 30 yet. She's a couple of years younger than you. So you guys are really doing the dream. Everybody wants to do what you're doing, which is traveling around Australia. And you've got no end date, right?
No, we've got no end date, really. I mean, I wanted to be home with the family around Christmas time, but that doesn't mean that that's the end of the trip. We're assuming that potentially we may be in Perth or somewhere around close to Perth by Christmas time.
Okay.
And if that is the case, we will drive to the nearest airport, fly back home for Christmas, because we like to spend our Christmas time around family and friends.
Yep.
And then we'll fly back to the car and keep going with the trip. As you said, we have no end date, and however long it takes, that's what we're prepared to do.
Fantastic.
And if along the way, you know, we will find some sort of work, that'd be great. I mean, we have both quite I wouldn't say sought after jobs, but jobs that, you know, that there's all over the country. You can find these sort of jobs.
Okay. So you're quite prepared to work as you're traveling if you need to, because obviously you've got a vehicle. You put quite a bit into this vehicle. We'll talk about that in a sec, but obviously you don't have an endless supply of funds. So you are prepared to work. And I understand Martina's a chef. Is that correct?
She is a chef, yes.
Yep.
She is a very, very good chef. She's worked in some fine dining restaurants all over the world, from London to Sydney, then in Melbourne.
Okay.
So she's done some very, very good things. But Look, we're very versatile in what we can do. I mean, it was funny. There's a big long story about how me and Martina met. You know, and her being a chef, she actually was a labourer up at a property near our property, up in the Southern Mountains. You know, and she was up there mixing concrete, felling trees, and chopping up wood. And she learned all this in about 2 weeks. You know, so I thought, wow, this girl really she has a profession.
Yes.
But also she's very versatile to the environment that she's around, you know, and she can adapt and learn very, very quickly. So this will be another bonus, I guess, when we're looking for work around the traps, you know, what we can do. We've been considering, you know, work on cattle stations and whatnot. So a lot of the places that we've been speaking to and looking at, they're looking for couples as well, which makes it easier to get a job.
Yes, yes, fair enough. Fair enough. So tell us a bit of the vehicle. You've got a 78 series troop carrier. And you were sort of trying to source this particular vehicle for quite a while. You definitely knew what you wanted and it wasn't easy for you to find. And then when you finally did find it, you decided you were going to do all these modifications. So just for the listeners, what have you actually done to this vehicle? Because you're sleeping in the vehicle, you're living in the vehicle, you're basically going to be showering outside the vehicle with one of those external shower-type tents. You don't have an actual tent to sleep in. So your entire journey is based around this vehicle. So what have you done to the vehicle to make it suitable so that Martina doesn't hit you over the head with a frying pan and say, I'm out of here? What have you and did she have and did Martina actually have any sort of input into the design of the vehicle, your modifications?
Don't worry, that frying pan has come close, you know, occasionally, even though the vehicle's set up, you know, to accommodate both of us. But no, look, we built the vehicle, I built the vehicle over the last sort of 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
As most of the listeners would know, the 78 series Turtle Land Cruisers with a 4.2 turbo motor are quite hard to come by, you know, people hold on to them. And this particular fellow that I found, and I chased him for a long time, he ended up needing to sell the car. So I jumped on it, you know. I was on holidays when he rang me, and I jumped on it like hell because I said, I'm not missing out on this deal. So once the car was in my possession, I started to build it as a tourer. And look, yeah, we sort of thought, do we tow a trailer behind it? Do we put a caravan behind it? Do I put a rooftop tent on it? Do I cut the roof off and make it into a pop top and whatnot? But, you know, you've got to also take into consideration, you've got a budget to stay within to be able to still do the trip.
Mm-hmm.
So in the end, I said, look, we're young, we're still quite agile and flexible and whatnot. So after a lot of research, I found it. Most people can put up with the limited amount of room to sleep inside the car once the drawer systems and the fridge is underneath.
Right.
I think in about 15, 20 years, it won't be the ideal thing for me either, climbing in and out of such a tight space. But at the moment, that's how we've set it up. We've bought drawers from Drifter, who's in New South Wales there. He's been building drawers for a number of years.
Right.
He's very good at what he does, you know, supporting an Australian-based company as well, so you're not buying some stuff from overseas.
Yep.
We've put a big auxiliary lithium system in there to support everything in there.
Yes.
Because some of the electronic stuff that we've got in there is a travel buddy oven. We've got a 12-volt Duetto hot water system in there.
Right.
What else have we got? We're cooking on an induction cooktop.
Right. Yep.
So I wanted to save space and weight, you know, carrying around a bigger gas cooker, gas bottle and all these things.
Yes.
So it's a big enough lithium to be able to support an induction cooker as well. We've got a huge 330-watt solar panel on the roof. It's great. It's maintained enough power.
Yep.
The only time we've come into a little bit of strife where the battery got below about 18% was in the Blue Mountains when we explored through there, and it rained for 4 days. Our little trips were within 10, 15 minutes of our campground, so the battery really didn't have enough time to recharge.
Yep, I understand.
Yeah. But then also outside with the hot water system, we've put an ensuite, a quick pitch ensuite off the side of it.
Yep.
So that provides privacy, whether you want to, you know, me or Martina want to shower, whether she wants to get changed, if we've pulled up at the beach and she's gone for a swim or a surf or something,
mm-hmm.
you know, she's got the privacy that she can jump into this little ensuite,
yep.
get changed. And the ensuite's a 30-second setup, so they're fantastic,
wow.
and I really recommend them.
Sounds like you've got pretty much everything covered. Now, in relation to what you've put in there, as I said, did Martina, other than the induction cooktop, because she is a chef, did you have anything you wanted specifically, Martina, being a girl? You didn't say, hey, I want a hair dryer and a hair straightener and all this kind of stuff?
To be honest, I don't think so, because I am kind of person who can adapt to stuff. So
right.
I'm pretty easygoing, like mm-hmm. anything. So
fantastic.
That's why actually me and David, we are together, because like we are very flexible and we can just go with the flow.
Fantastic stuff. David, it sounds like you've got the partner from heaven, and you've got this lifestyle. It's living the dream that everybody would love to do, and you're in your late 20s and early 30s. And as I said, some people sell everything to do what you're doing. So, mate, what we're going to do, we might just stop it here. We've spoke about the trip. We've spoke about your car. And the next time we touch base I'm going to get you to send me some photographs so my listeners can look at the website. They're going to see these photographs of you and Martina living the dream. They're going to be as envious as anything. And we're going to follow your no end date journey. And I think it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be brilliant.
That'll be fantastic. Looking forward to sharing all the stories and the photos and everything with you and your listeners. That'll be great.
Fantastic. Now, before I just wind this little bit up, David, Martina, I've got to play a song. I only play Aussie. Tell us, what would your favourite song be, just to get this introduction of you two's off for my listeners?
Well, look, there's a number of songs, you know, that we'd love to hear, but I think to start this off with, Travis Collins and Amber Lawrence, they have a song called Our Backyard. So I think the words and the lyrics in that song would describe what we're doing perfectly.
Fantastic. And I think it is. Australia is going to be your backyard, and it's going to certainly be for the next year, 18 months or so. So I'm going to put that up for the listeners now, and we're going to be back with more Roaming Oz straight after that. Thank you so much for your time, David Martina, and we're going to catch up with you very soon in the next couple of weeks.
Great. Thanks very much, Phil.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Now stick around, listeners, for Our Backyard, and we'll be back in Our Backyard with more Roaming Oz.
I've stood on the steps of the Coliseum. I've marveled at the northern lights. Watch the flicker of the Eiffel Tower on a hot French summer night. Walk the cobblestone streets of London, roll to 7 on the Vegas Strip. Been on Broadway in New York City, I loved every minute.
There's nothing like a silver and sunset, setting fire to nothing like a silver tongued sunset, setting fire to an outback sky. Nothing like taking in the harbor from the man.
Well, what a great show, Lynn. Hey.
Yes?
It's such a fantastic place.
Oh, I thought you were just saying, hey.
No, no, no. The town of Hay. What yes, a beautiful town.
It is. It's a lovely town. A nice place to stop over.
Absolutely. And we met some fantastic people there.
We sure did,
at
yes.
At the Sheer Outback and yes. so on. And where are we going to be next week?
Well, next week we're continuing the Cobb Highway and we're heading to Broken Hill.
Broken Hill. Listeners, one of my most favourite towns. That is where they filmed Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, isn't it? Or a big part of it.
A part of it, yes.
Yes.
And the Palais Theatre.
The Palais Hotel.
Oh, Palais Hotel, yes, sorry. Yes.
Now, have you organised for me to see the people at the Palais Hotel?
Yes, yes. We're doing an interview with Esther.
Okay, brilliant. And then after that?
We're talking to the Broken Hill Tourist Park and we're also going to chat to Irving, the tour guide that does tours out of there.
Fantastic. And then?
And we're also going to stop in and see Chris with the Big Picture.
Now, the Big Picture, listeners, if you haven't heard of it, go on to Google and check it out. The Big Picture is huge. It's about 30 metres long.
Mm,
and
yes.
I'm not sure, maybe it's 4 or 5 metres tall.
No,
it is
it's
big.
Taller than that,
is it?
Yeah.
It is huge. And it took like 2 years to paint that thing.
Yes.
And I don't know how many tons of paint.
A lot.
It's huge. And the foreground of the picture is all the Australian landscape, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, and animals and, yeah, everything yes. to do with the outback.
Absolutely brilliant. So we'll be talking with Chris there at the Big Picture. And also, listeners, don't forget our great selection of Aussie music as requested by the people we interview.
Yes.
All right. And don't forget the week after that, listeners, hopefully we're going to be catching up with David and Martina.
Again, yes.
Again.
Continuing their journey.
Continuing their big lap. We're going to catch up with David and Martina every couple of weeks and they're going to fill us up with the information as to where they've been.
Oh, how exciting.
And where they're heading.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page or allaussieradio.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.